I'd like now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Kim Sorvik. He is a research associate professor at the University of New Mexico School of Architecture and Planning. He's an author, lecturer, and consultant on sustainable land use planning and green building. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks very much. I'm glad to be here.
Paul Campos is joining us here in the cafe. He's an attorney. He's former Santa Fe County Commissioner from 2001 through 2008. And he's an advocate for creating a locally owned public electric utility. Welcome.
Thank you.
And joining us by phone is Patricia Leon. She's co-director of the Las Vegas Peace and Justice Center, Las Vegas, New Mexico. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.
So we are here to talk about some bills that are before the New Mexico legislature that pertain to the oil and gas industry here in New Mexico. And it's something called preemption. What is preemption?
Well, essentially it means that local government has any rights to say anything about oil development taken away from them and concentrated at the state level. So the state preempts all legislation and ordinances having anything to do with oil and gas. And there are five bills that have been introduced to that effect this session. It's been an annual thing. There's usually one, maybe two of these that show up. But this year, there are five of them.
Why are there so many?
Well, I suppose that's speculation. We can start with the sort of grudge match. Now that the Republicans have managed to take over the House, there certainly is a sense of pushing anything they can push, and I think that applies to this. The industry lobbyists are using Mora County's ban on any kind of drilling, which was done as a protest, I think, and should be respected as such, even though they lost their court case. But they're using Mora to stir up fear among their partisans that everybody in the state is going to do the same thing. Having seen Mora overturned, it's less likely than it was before that anybody is going to be legally foolish enough to try to pass an outright ban. But that's not a good reason for taking away all local powers.
So Mora was not the only ordinance passed at a county or local level in New Mexico. What are some of the other ordinances that we've seen in New Mexico? There's a bunch of them.
There's 25 at a minimum. There is a center up at the University of Colorado Law School that studies these kind of things, and they have a list that includes about 25 different local jurisdictions in New Mexico that have some ordinance on the books that affects oil and gas, usually under zoning. These have to do with setbacks from residences, schools, hospitals, and so on. Some of them are very simple, like don't put a storage tank in a floodplain, you fools. some of them are as comprehensive as San Miguel's or Rio Arribas. There's a wide variety, but there are 25 of them, and they have been on the books for a long time. The other thing that's important to know about them is that they're from oil-producing areas. Farmington has one. Hobbs has one. Eddy County has one of the more comprehensive ones. This is not just something about what the industry always accuses people of not in my backyard. This is very important to people who are in producing areas because it's one of the things that the state doesn't really cover. But New Mexico doesn't have any setback requirements for wells. They have it for pits and tanks, but they're one of the few states that treats a well as if it could go anywhere.
Now, when you've got ordinances like this that are passed, they're, as you're talking about, they're passed in response to actual environmental impacts, in response to real problems. What are some of the environmental impacts that landowners and municipalities have been seeing from oil and gas development in New Mexico?
Well, there's a long list of them. There is a serious problem of methane leakage. We've read about it recently that the Four Corners has this cloud of methane over it that is unique in the entire U.S. The siting of wells, which modern technology makes quite flexible, the industry is still treating that as if where they say is the only possibility, and that can endanger your livestock, that can endanger structures that farmers have set up. It can endanger people's homes. The chemicals that are used and the potential for an explosion or a fire at a well or a storage tank, those are big issues. And the only way to solve them and still allow drilling is to keep them away from where people live, work, play, worship, whatever it is. There's also access roads that chew up the landscape the way they're done conventionally, to the point that in some cases you can have nearly 24% of a section of land chewed up by pads and access roads because it's just done helter-skelter. One of the things that the more comprehensive ordinances often ask for is clustering of wells so that there is less surface disturbance, because the surface property should not just be destroyed. The drillers have a right under split estate for reasonable access, but reasonable is an important word that's often ignored.
Yeah, I was glad Kim mentioned the roads. There are many negative side effects of just going with state-level regulations of the oil and gas industry. Every taxpayer should oppose preemption simply just based on the repairs and upgrades that taxpayers in New Mexico are now footing the bill for. We're talking about a budget of $300 million minimum for damage to roads in New Mexico from heavy oil field traffic. And so San Miguel County, as one example, has put into their ordinance that the industry will pay for the damage to those roads, not the taxpayers of New Mexico. There is no other industry that we subsidize as severely as the oil and gas industry, and that's why communities need to have control over the say around zoning issues in their communities. Taking away local powers like this, it's staggering. It's really disconcerting, and what we would like people to do here in New Mexico right now is to call their senators and representatives and tell them that they oppose preemption. There are, like Kim said, five bills right now. House Bill 366 is the one gaining most momentum. And later today at 1:30 p.m. at the Roundhouse in room 309 will be the second committee hearing for House Bill 366. And then it would move to the House floor if it makes it through that committee later today. So we're encouraging people, call their senators and reps, email them, go to the hearing today at 1:30 in room 309 and say that you simply oppose preemption. Who knows better than local communities that we don't want a rig outside our school. We don't want a rig under a cemetery, which actually has happened. They've actually drilled under cemeteries. So let the communities make those decisions. We are the experimental zones for democracy, and to take that power away is un-American, frankly.
That's the House Judiciary Committee, just for those who are listening. And I do want to clarify one thing. That $300 million is actually only for the DOT District 2, which is the southeast corner of the state. And $300 million is about four times the amount that was projected as new revenue from oil and gas for 2015.
So what we're talking about here is something that is called externalized costs. And let's talk about what that means. I mean, whenever there are environmental issues, there are externalized costs. What does that mean, and what does that mean with respect to the oil and gas industry, roads, things like that?
I'd like to just speak generally, Mary Charlotte. I was a county commissioner when the county passed an ordinance regulating a lot of the aspects of oil production in Santa Fe County in 2008. And the issues we were concerned about are property values. You know, you have a well near your house, your property value goes down, which is a huge issue. It's not a small thing. I think most people can relate to that. Quality of life with the noises, with people using your roads, creation of dust, and access to your aquifers. That's such an important issue. Aquifers are a source of life for many people who are in wells. And if they lose access to the aquifer because it's polluted, which means that the water is no longer usable for human consumption, the value of your home is maybe zero. Trying to get financing on a home that's near an oil well or where there's issues of contamination near an aquifer are huge. We also were concerned here at the county with externalization of costs. Oil and gas companies make money because they externalize. They do not pay for things. They push them off to the local community, to the landowner. And we pay for that. Therefore, they make huge profits. It's one of the most profitable industries in the world today.
But only because they don't pay for their own roads
exactly.
And things like that. And because they also don't pay for the, if an aquifer is polluted, they certainly aren't going to pay for the cleanup.
Well, there would be certainly some litigation concerning that. There may be demands like in the Gulf of Mexico after the huge spills a couple of years ago that required oil companies to. But it's huge and it involves litigation. It takes years. And some of these aquifers cannot be repaired. They will never be usable again, or maybe not for thousands of years.
Well, and industries like this have so much power and money that instead of paying for something afterwards, they settle. There was a recent case back east, I think it was New Jersey, where it was clearly documented and accepted by the court that I believe it was Exxon was responsible for pollution. If it wasn't $1 billion worth, it was something like that. And they settled.
$9 billion.
Was it $9 billion?
A suit for $9 billion in New Jersey, and the Christie administration settled it for about 280 some million.
Yeah, right. That is externalization of cost, because given that that damage occurred and that it was caused directly by the oil drillers, then that is a cost that the public bears, either by having to pay for the cleanup in money or by living with the health issues and the loss of productive land and so on that result from it. Those externalized costs are the basis of the profit margin of this industry in a way that is pretty unique. Every industry would like to be able to do this, and they do some of it. It's a standard corporate strategy. But oil and gas has managed to push this to the forefront in a way that is quite unique.
Not to mention climate change.
And I actually wanted to bring it down to an even more personal level about externalized costs. Here in San Miguel County, we have brought Gilbert and Virginia Armenta to our community multiple times to talk to folks about what happened to them in San Juan County. They are generational ranchers. The industry has destroyed their land. Their cattle have died from drinking from the leaking tanks, drinking from the ponds with the fracking fluids. And also, they destroyed the cemetery on the Armenta family land. And Gilbert and Virginia took the industry to court, and they lost. So for even folks who can afford to take the industry to court, the odds are not in their favor.
Mayor Charlotte, I'd like to add a couple of things. Just going back and getting a little perspective, Kim mentioned about the political situation has certainly drastically changed, but I think the basic thing that has changed here is that we have new technology, fracking. Fracking has made a lot of oil and gas deposits accessible now. In the past, you know, it could be Hobbs, it could be Farmington, it could be Raton, but now they're looking at the entire state. Fracking is opening the entire state to potential oil and gas. So, in the past, the state was happy to regulate oil and gas in the areas where they were producing stuff. They were regulating the pipelines. That was their thing. Now they want to control everything, including what we do in our community. And that's what these ordinances, that's what we did here in Santa Fe County. We protected our community in the Galisteo, the water, the quality of life. And that's what they want to take away from us. And it goes down to quality of life, to value of your property. Can you imagine your home is the biggest investment most people make in their whole lifetime? That thing can drastically be reduced 20, 30, 50%. That's what we're talking about. Local control protects the landowners, protects our water and our local air.
And one of the arguments being put forth by the industry at the legislature right now is that these local ordinances are burdening business. So I decided to look into where did preemption start in the first place in this country, and it was the tobacco companies who pioneered the use of state preemption when cities began demanding either smoke-free restaurants or smoke-free sections of restaurants. The tobacco companies argued that these industries would hurt business. In fact, it didn't play out that way. It actually ended up helping business in the long run. But if you look at sort of the roots of preemption, it's about big business wanting to do what they want to do without any consequences. So that right there says communities need to wake up and look at this preemption issue. Their arguments just don't hold water.
Well, and the way that some of these bills are framed is so general that it would really do widespread damage. There are four of them that are essentially straightforward preemption. The language varies some, but one of them says, a county shall not adopt ordinances that restrict oil and gas activities. In theory, that could be applied to your parking ordinance. And when I was back east looking at the Marcellus Shale oil and gas development, there were signs all over, pathetic little no parking signs trying to keep the big rigs off of private parking lots and the sides of roads that couldn't support them. That's an extreme example, but everything that we regulate at the local level could be challenged if that kind of law passes with that broad language. Worse yet, two of the bills in the Senate, Senate Bill 184 and Senate Bill 421, try to disguise the fact that they are to be passed, or they're proposed to be passed, for the benefit of a single industry by throwing in a handful of other industries that will also be exempt from local law. Mining, including gravel, coal, geothermal, and big agriculture, are all candidates for being completely above the law when it comes to local ordinances.
So that means that La Bajada could not be regulated and they could just put a big gravel mine in there?
No mining could be regulated. You would not be able to pass any local ordinance that said anything about mining. You could probably not even pass anything that said something about weight restrictions on a road that was used by gravel trucks, or in the case of Lamy, being used supposedly to put tankers on the road and put it into rail cars so that they can go and explode like they did in Quebec. That's a whole other scandal, because those are cars that are intended for soybean oil, not crude oil.
And so, once again, you get into a thing where if a road can't support the weight of some of these trucks, it's incumbent on the local community to strengthen the roads for this industry, which isn't paying for that.
Well, that's the thing about the $300 million that Pat mentioned. It's hard to document this in some cases, but in those counties, they had roads that were perfectly adequate for the ordinary rural traffic, cars, pickups, the occasional farm truck. When the boom of drilling came in, those roads were not to an adequate standard. They would never have had to be rebuilt. The community would never have faced that cost for their own use. So it's very clear that all the damage is from the oil field activities, and that's $300 million worth just in that one DOT region.
And those are paid for by local areas?
Well, they're paid by the DOT, and this is the other smokescreen.
Department of Transportation.
Yeah,
and
the other smokescreen.
Local counties and cities have to pay for things within their jurisdiction,
yeah,
which are county roads, and there are huge numbers of county roads that are dirt roads that are used by these trucks to access the oil wells and their mining operations.
And the smokescreen that the industry is using by trying to pit the state against the counties on this is completely illogical, because counties are largely funded by the state, and they're also funded by property tax. Both of those are damaged. If the county loses a source of revenue of its own, or if the county incurs a cost, ultimately that's going to either come out of the state budget or not be paid at all. And there, you have an externalized cost. The attempt that has been made in several counties now to assess impact fees as a condition of permit, it's a very normal thing. We do that when a Walmart comes in, or when somebody puts in a 200-unit residential subdivision. They have to pay for improving the roads to meet the traffic demand. And several counties have tried to do that now with this issue of oil and gas and roads, as well as emergency response and so on. Under preemption, that would be illegal. So the counties are trying to recoup money from the people responsible. They're saving the state money potentially by doing that, and the state is supposed to preempt that and take it away and make it illegal. That doesn't make any financial or fiscal sense.
And to add to Kim's point, the oil and gas, we are told it is important for revenue across the state. But even according to the industry's own statistics, 70% of the general fund and 97% of real income for ordinary New Mexicans come from other industries, including tourism, which it would be at significant risk with an uncontrolled drilling situation. I really want people to oppose preemption, even if you say, I believe in states' rights. Well, if you believe in states' rights, you should even more strongly believe in local rights, because that's where we can easily remove someone who is not doing well. Local government is the most accessible and accountable of all the levels of government and most responsive to the popular will. So if we don't like what someone's doing at that more local level, we can vote them out of office. But if these preemption bills go through, it's the Oil Conservation Division, which is political appointees, who would be guiding how the industry, oil and gas industry, works in New Mexico. That is completely wrong. We've got to get people out to oppose preemption.
Kim Sorvig, Paul Campos, and Pat Leon have been talking about preemption in the New Mexico legislature. Once again, 1:30 today in room 309 at the Roundhouse will be the
House Bill 366. It's the only one that's been voted on yet. There are four others that would do roughly the same thing.
Well, I want to thank you all so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.